Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. If you'd like to call into the show, the phone number is 888-627-6008. Again, that's 888-627-6008. Now, months into the unprecedented nationwide shutdown and lockdown in response to the worldwide coronavirus pandemic, much of the nation is beginning to slowly move toward a return to some kind of normalcy where people will be able to resume their lives and livelihoods, with some notable exceptions, as we'll hear about in a few minutes. And while millions of Americans are restless, frustrated, and eager to get on with their lives, questions are arising about whether this radical shutdown is justified and how much longer we should continue struggling with its severe restrictions. I'm not saying that there isn't a serious threat to people's lives from coronavirus, also known as COVID-19, but we're learning that most of those who have died from the disease were elderly and/or had serious underlying health conditions. We now know that some 80% of those infected either don't even know they have been infected or have mild symptoms, and 98% of those who come down with the disease recover from it. As I mentioned on the last show, there's a growing concern that the number of coronavirus cases and deaths have been inflated to justify the dire warnings about it and draconian methods employed in response to it. All along, our big brother-loving leftist mainstream media have been playing up these dire, hysterical warnings in some cases and terrorizing the public. I'll have much more to say about the pandemic situation later in today's show. First, however, I want to discuss a major new development in the political left's ongoing Russia collusion hoax and to tie in these efforts with those on the left who want to see this country fall apart over the coronavirus pandemic. Last week, thanks to Acting Director of National Intelligence Rick Grenell and Attorney General Bill Barr, long secret transcripts of Obama officials testifying under oath were made public, and they were a bombshell if you care about the truth. Barr and Grenell forced Representative Adam Schiff, Chairman of the House Intel Committee, to make these transcripts public. And they show conclusively that every single one of the officials who testified under oath in secret admitted that they had no evidence whatsoever, not one shred of evidence implicating Donald Trump in any kind of misconduct, collusion, blackmail, or what have you involving Russia, Ukraine, or anything else. What this means is that everyone on the political right suspected all along. That is, that the president is entirely innocent of any wrongdoing or misconduct. The testimony also adds weight to the contention that we have been witnessing a coup attempt in this country, a conspiracy at the highest levels of government to overthrow a duly elected president. Here's some audio from the Rush Limbaugh radio show May 8th about the Trump-Russia collusion hoax and Barr's Department of Justice's unprecedented dropping of charges against Trump's former National Security Advisor, General Flynn, who had been compelled to plead guilty to supposedly lying about a conversation he had with the Russian ambassador. Play soundbite one, please.
Well, you might call it Vindication Day. Virtually everything about the Russia investigation that you in this audience have been told by me and pretty much everybody else informed in so-called conservative media has been right on the money for 3 years. We told you there was no collusion between Trump and Russia and that there was no evidence, that it was entirely made up. And going all the way back to 2017, during the transition between Trump's election and his inauguration in January of 2016, started questioning, you know, what did Obama know and when did he know it? Because that was always the question. It wasn't what did Trump know. And it is, you know, it's been fascinating for me to watch left-wing media. It started yesterday on the program as the Flynn news was breaking, as the DOJ announced that they were dropping the charges against Flynn, dropping the case. Like I told you at the end of the program, this is monumental. This kind of thing doesn't happen, folks. Whether it be the Department of Justice or whether it be a state attorney or district attorney, they just don't drop charges on people. They maybe will let a judge take care of a mess for them by dismissing a case. But they don't do what happened yesterday. It just doesn't, particularly when the defendant has pled guilty, as Flynn did. Flynn pled guilty. And that's what the drive-by media couldn't get past yesterday. And I was watching CNN has had a meltdown over this. CNN's meltdown yesterday and last night was total. And they're not even covering it today. The entire foundation, the entire reason that the American media has been getting up and going to work for the past 3 years just blew up in their faces yesterday. There has never been anything they assured us there was. There was no collusion. There was no Trump as a Russian agent. There was no Russian interference in the election or the outcome. The Russians had nothing to do with who won and who lost the election. There was never any evidence suggesting that they did play any role. Folks, this is the biggest political scandal, certainly in my lifetime. It was the complete array of the Washington establishment against one man, Donald Trump. And it was purposed to destroy him, his family, his career, his businesses, and to get him out of office and to reverse the election results of 2016. And they never had a shred of evidence for any of it. It did not happen. The Russians had nothing to do with our election. They had nothing to do with the outcome, above and beyond what they normally try to do, like the Chinese are always trying to sabotage. So we've got enemies. But the election was legitimate. It was fair. And there was no collusion between Trump or anybody else in his campaign and the Russians. The collusion that did happen took place between the Hillary Clinton campaign, the Democrat National Committee, and Russia in the creation, the paying for, in the creation of the Steele dossier, which served as the bogus basis for everything. So yesterday, when the DOJ announces that they're dropping the charges and dismissing the case, CNN was melting down before my eyes. And one of the reporters just couldn't get past the idea.
Why? This is partisanship. This is a travesty. Why Flynn had pled guilty. This is Trump turning the Department of Justice into his personal law firm.
But the reason he pled guilty was to stop the bleeding. He pled guilty. Do you know that Mueller didn't even bring charges for 10 months after taking the case on Flynn? They didn't have anything. They had to manufacture a bunch of things, and they promised, after bankrupting him, that they would bankrupt his son. This is not hard to learn. It's not hard to find. It's out there. It's in the public domain. Robert Mueller and all of these Democrat prosecutors that were in on this bogus investigation were threatening Flynn with total ruin, and then they were going to go after his son. They were going to go after his son as falsely registering as an agent of Israel or some such thing. They needed Flynn out of the way. They needed Flynn not as national security advisor. They needed him out of the way so that their investigation of Trump could go on without Trump knowing about it. And there are many other reasons they wanted to get rid of Flynn, too. Obama hated his guts. But, man, look at what else we've learned in addition to all that. James Clapper, we now know because of the release of transcripts, James Clapper testifying under oath before various congressional committees, quote, "I never saw any direct empirical evidence that the Trump campaign or somebody in it was plotting or conspiring with the Russians to meddle with the election." Clapper testified to that in 2017. He testified, John Brennan the same. These people were all testifying under oath that they hadn't seen a shred of evidence that Trump or anybody in his campaign was plotting or conspiring or colluding with the Russians to meddle with the election. Now, there's a lot of people that knew Clapper had testified to this, and not a single one of them leaked that he was lying through his teeth every day on CNN. We have put together a montage of Clapper and John Brennan, starting in 2017 all the way through 2020, appearing on CNN, a couple of other places. And I want you to keep in mind, as you listen to this, Clapper was revealed to have testified, quote, "I never saw any direct empirical evidence that the Trump campaign or anybody in it was plotting or conspiring with the Russians to meddle with the election." Now, our montage.
I really do wonder whether the Russians have something on him.
The Russians may have something on him personally.
What a great case officer Vladimir Putin is. He knows how to handle an asset, and that's what he's doing with the president.
He knows that Russia interfered on his behalf. He really is hoping that his pal Vladimir is going to come through once again.
The Russian interference, the Russian meddling.
He called publicly on the Russians to find Hillary's emails. Collusion means cooperating.
The Russians meddled, and successfully so, in the election 2016. That cast doubt on the legitimacy of that election.
I equate it to the betrayal of one's nation, aiding and abetting, giving comfort to an enemy.
What we have here is a case of collusion.
The champagne corks were going to be popping in Moscow.
Do you agree the president of the United States is a Russian asset?
I completely agree.
Yeah, I'm doing my best to control what is a natural tendency to real rage and anger here. This is so beyond the pale, and there needs to be some serious accountability here. Folks, we lost the House of Representatives because of this. We lost 2 years, 2.5 years of an agenda being implemented. Who knows what other damage resulted to this country because of this?
Well, as you just heard, for years now, former Obama administration CIA Director John Brennan, former National Intelligence Director James Clapper, and so many other Obama officials have been lying about the preposterous Trump-Russia collusion claims over and over and over in the media on a daily basis, all the while knowing there was not a bit of evidence for it, and all the while being cheered on by the leftist-dominated mainstream media. Here's more audio from Fox's Hannity show, May 8th, about the Russia collusion hoax and the role Representative Adam Schiff played in it. Play soundbite 2, please.
First, we begin on this Friday night, the corrupt, the compromised, the congenital liar, Adam Schiff. He is a national disgrace and even worse than I thought, thanks to acting National Intel Director Rick Grenell. Thanks to the Attorney General of the United States, Bill Barr, we have definitive proof of Schiff's malicious dishonesty in the form of roughly 6,000 pages, newly released sworn testimony he's been hiding from the American people. This comes from the Intel Committee's 2017 Russia investigation. These are the interviews that were taken under oath. We have a complete timeline of Schiff's unethical behavior, his outright lying on all of the media, and we begin. Let's start with the date, July 17, 2017. It is on that day that Adam Schiff listened to Obama's Director of National Intelligence, that guy in the middle, James Clapper. And he testified under oath saying, quote, "I never saw any direct empirical evidence that the Trump campaign or someone in it was plotting or conspiring with the Russians to meddle with the election." On October 13th, same year, Adam Schiff heard from Obama official Samantha Power, who testified she has no evidence of collusion. Quote, "I'm not in possession of anything." On September 8th, 2017, Susan Rice telling Adam Schiff, quote, "To the best of my recollection, there wasn't anything smoking, and I don't recall intelligence that I would consider evidence to that effect." On November 3rd, 2017, former Deputy Attorney General Yates, Sally Yates, concluding to Adam Schiff, there was no evidence of collusion. But on March 13th, 2018, just 4 months after those four officials and others testified, there was zero evidence of any Trump-Russia collusion. The congenital liar Schiff got in front of a camera And of course, not questioned, he was held up as some kind of hero by the mob and the media, the socialist Pravda of our day, and said there was significant evidence of Trump-Russia collusion. He knew it was a lie. He had all the testimony proving it was a lie. But this is what he told the American people. Take a look.
The American people need to know whether the Russians still have something they can hold over the president's head, the president of the United States. So our work is far from done. I could certainly say with confidence that there is significant evidence of collusion between the campaign and Russia.
Now, let's not forget, there was only one guy who thought he was talking to a Russian, and that was Schiff. And you have a guy that was pranking. That's right, Adam Schiff. Thought it was a real Russian. We have a compromising material, Donald Trump. What's the nature of the compromise? Naked pictures. Does Vladimir know? Yeah, but the court, Vladimir no compromising material in Donald Trump. That's him on tape. He thought he was colluding with a Russian, he thought. A year later, by the way, March 24, 2019, there's Schiff repeating his lies as he had all throughout this time period, all over the media. They never, ever challenged him. They were giddy with this. Welcome back, Congressman. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you trashing Trump. What news do you have today? What lies did you tell us? And they let him get away with it. This time, ABC News. Take a look.
You have said, though, in the past there was significant evidence of collusion. How do you square that with Robert Mueller's decision not to indict anyone?
And there is significant evidence of collusion, and we've set that out time and time again.
Hey, George, you going to call him out for the lie? You going to invite him back and say, why did you lie to us? And get this, on April 7, 2019, after the Mueller report found no evidence of Trump-Russia collusion, that was the fourth investigation, Schiff continued to lie. Four investigations, he's still lying. He goes on fake Jake News Tapper's Sunday show that nobody watches and said that there was ample evidence of collusion. This is why it's CNN fake news and why people chant CNN sucks. Take a look.
What I've said on your show and others, Jake, for over a year now is that, yes, there's ample evidence of collusion in plain sight, but that is not the same thing as proof of a criminal conspiracy beyond a reasonable doubt.
That is the guy that represented the entire Democratic Party and the House Intel Committee. Russia, 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 Ukraine, Ukraine, Ukraine. A proven liar, a disgusting sociopath, and the congenital liar Schiff. He damaged this country with all of these lies, one hoax after another, all his conspiracy theories, the mob and the media. You people in the mob, you are his willing accomplices. You've been his dupe the whole way. Lie after lie, Russian lies, Ukrainian lies, Schiff show lies. And he's leading his party and the mob into what are uncharted waters that literally threaten the constitutional order of this country. Just take a look at this creepy looking lunatic who will do and say anything to smear, slander, besmirch Donald Trump and thrust himself, of course, into the lights of the cameras, in the limelight. This lying that you just witnessed, it is only the tip of the iceberg. For example, I could go on the whole show. November 15, 2017, Schiff defended Hillary's bought and paid for, even the New York Times now recognizes, likely Russian disinformation from the get-go because the Russians knew Schiff, knew Steele was feeding it to Hillary. They were helping Hillary. They were creating the chaos Devin Nunes warned Obama and Biden about in 2014, and they didn't listen to. And he said that much of the documents, meaning the dossier, had proved true. That was another lie. December 19, 2017, during McCabe's sworn testimony, the former deputy FBI director could not point to one single claim, not one. This is McCabe. One, not one, in Steele's dossier that he knew was true and accurate. And all of that is in this document dump yesterday, but thanks to Rick Grenell and Attorney General Barr. In fact, he also testified, McCabe did. He didn't know if the Steele material on Carter Page, he didn't know if any of it was true. None of it was true. This was the material that was used starting in October of 2016 as the basis for four separate FISA applications. Even McCabe admitted in sworn testimony, no dossier, no warrant. They said it wasn't true. It's in his testimony. In February 2018, Schiff authored a memo claiming there's absolutely no FISA abuse whatsoever, despite Congressman Devin Nunes, who told the country the truth. Schiff lied. Nunes told the truth. Warning to the country. Nunes was telling all of us the truth. This guy was telling us lies even when he had testimony that was telling him they were lies. The DOJ's inspector general, he was telling the truth. Steele's dossier was Russian disinformation all along. Schiff lied to socialist comrades in the Democratic Party. They helped him lie, and the mob and the media acted as his PR staff.
Here's some angry and perhaps frightened comments from a key player in the scheme to destroy Donald Trump with the phony Russia collusion hoax and other things. Former Obama admin CIA Director John Brennan whining about the recent actions of Attorney General Barr and Acting Director of National Intelligence Grinnell, including the unprecedented dropping of the DOJ's case against Flynn and the publicizing of unmasking activities of former Obama administration officials and other matters. Here's Brennan appearing on one of his most sycophantic networks, the rabidly anti-Trump MSNBC. Please play soundbite 3.
Director Brennan, we know, and you and I have had lots of conversations about this, that since the first weeks of Trump's presidency, he asked Jim Comey to see to it to let Flynn go, and he's wanted to reach his hands deep into the intelligence community. He had two of the most subservient political allies in Jeff Sessions and in Mike Pompeo, who was CIA director, your successor. And these things that have happened in the last, as you said, since the pandemic has really gripped the country, didn't happen. Even under Sessions' rule of the Justice Department and under Pompeo's rule of the CIA. What does it say to you that we now have a DOJ who saw to it to let Flynn go by subverting justice and the will of career prosecutors, and a head of DNI that saw to it to release these names of people who sought information on the Kislyak intercepts?
Well, Nicole, I think our country is in very serious trouble. When you have such blatant political corruption at the highest levels of U.S. government, something I never thought I would see in my lifetime. But when you have an administration, you know, the White House, the Attorney General, the acting head of the intelligence community, all acting in concert to try to advance the personal interests of Mr. Trump and to misrepresent the facts and abuse the authorities within the intelligence community and the law enforcement community in order to continue to perpetrate this egregious abuse of authority on the American people, which is what it is. I think this is very, very serious. And, you know, in my tweet, I mentioned that Mr. Trump is playing by a despot's playbook, and I really believe that. And despots do anything they can to attain power, but then also will do anything possible to retain power. And that means undercutting their enemies and adversaries and co-opting the instruments of government, judicial system, the law enforcement and intelligence and security services. And we see that right now playing out in our own country. Again, I am aghast at what I'm seeing here when I witnessed this around the globe over the last several decades. But until Mr. Trump came into the White House, we never, ever had this type of egregious abuse of the instruments of government and the instruments of our intelligence and national security organizations that keep this country strong and safe. And the fact that they're being manipulated and exploited by individuals who don't have the principles that are needed to lead our great country, I really am very worried about what's going to happen in the coming months.
Subverting justice and the will of clear prosecutors? And Trump is a despot, undercutting his adversaries? And Brennan is aghast at the egregious abuse by Trump. Now, this is a guy who admitted to once voting for the Communist Party USA's candidate for president of the United States. Now, I'm thinking Brennan is very worried about what's going to happen in this country in the coming months, because he, who has been doing exactly what he's accusing Trump and Trump's people of doing, may well be the subject of criminal matters himself, criminal charges possibly, in the coming months. We will see. Getting back to news about the pandemic, here are the latest figures on the disease. According to the World Health Organization, as of yesterday, May 16th, there have been 4,425,485 cases of COVID-19 worldwide and 302,059 deaths. If you look back at the WHO data, the U.S. has more cases than anywhere else in the world. I'm sorry, if you look at the WHO data and the maps they show on their site as of today, you see that the U.S. has more cases than anywhere else in the world. That may have to do with the fact that the U.S. is doing more testing than anywhere else in the world, according to President Trump. Interestingly, Communist China reports almost no new cases reported in the past 7 days. Do you trust communists to tell the truth? Here in the U.S., as of yesterday, May 16th, there have been 1,435,098 confirmed cases of coronavirus and 87,315 deaths, according to the U.S. government's Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC. As I mentioned earlier, there's a growing suspicion that the CDC may be inflating figures on coronavirus cases and deaths. Some of you may be familiar with a YouTube video some weeks ago wherein two California doctors questioned the severity of the pandemic and related that they have spoken with other doctors who told them that they have been pressured, when they cannot determine conclusively a patient's cause of death, to attribute it to coronavirus. That video was taken down by YouTube. More recently, White House coronavirus coordinator Dr. Deborah Birx was supposedly unhappy with the CDC, and she said she couldn't trust the coronavirus numbers they were reporting on cases and deaths. This, of all places, was in the Washington Post recently. I don't look at the Washington Post. It's rather hard to do for me on a regular basis. I'm using an article about what they had reported from theblaze.com on May 10th. The headline of the article says, Dr. Deborah Birx reportedly said, quote, "There is nothing from the CDC that I can trust," end quote. And it states, Dr. Deborah Birx allegedly criticized the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention last week during a coronavirus meeting on Wednesday with Robert Redfield, the director of CDC. Birx said, quote, "There is nothing from the CDC that I can trust," close quote, the Washington Post reported. Birx, who was the White House Coronavirus Task Force Response Coordinator, reportedly said that the CDC was inflating COVID-19 statistics by up to 25%. Quote, "Birx and others were frustrated with the CDC's antiquated system for tracking virus data, which they worried was inflating some cases, such as mortality rate and case count, by as much as 25%, according to four people present for the discussion or later briefed on it. Two senior administration officials said the discussion was not heated," close quote, the newspaper said. Now, of course, here is the old unnamed sources attribution. So we don't have anyone definitively who will vouch for this. I don't know that Birx will want to discuss it. But anyway, continuing on with the article, quote, "The flare-up came 2 days after it was reported that an internal government model, based on data from the CDC and other agencies, projected the daily death count would rise to 3,000 by June 1, the Post reported. The 3,000 projected daily COVID-19 deaths number was taken from a report by Justin Lessler, an associate professor of epidemiology at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He created a novel coronavirus model but says the report was a, quote, work in progress," close quote. Lessler wasn't sure how his research was turned into a slide deck by government officials or how it first appeared in the New York Times last week. In a statement, Birx commented on the report. Quote, "Contrary to data from Johns Hopkins, which shows daily coronavirus deaths in the U.S. staying steady at 2,000 per day for several weeks, mortality is slowly declining each day," close quote. The U.S. had 1,422 confirmed coronavirus deaths on Saturday. That's going back to the period before May 10th, and 1,687 on Friday. Last week, Birx said the medical community might have underestimated the number of asymptomatic cases of coronavirus at the beginning of the pandemic. Quote, I think we're learning every day about the virus and how it interacts with us as human hosts, close quote, Burks told Fox News host Jeanine Pirro. Quote, and that's been very important, so to constantly be triangulating data, close quote. Quote, I think we understand very early on, we underestimated very early on the number of asymptomatic cases, and I think we're really beginning to understand there are people that get infected, that those symptoms are so low grade that they don't even know that they're infected, close quote, Burks added. Quote, and we're beginning to see that with the New York studies of this, of their zero, and we're beginning to see that with the New York studies of their zero antibody studies, close quote. In early March, the World Health Organization said the mortality rate for COVID-19 was around 3.4%, I believe. That's the article again. Getting away from the article, as I mentioned earlier, many parts of the country are beginning to ease coronavirus restrictions, but not all. Despite there being a pronounced drop in new cases and deaths in most, if not all, areas. Here's some audio from Fox's Tucker Carlson tonight, May 15, about this. Play soundbite 4, please.
But first tonight, the country appears to be splitting into two hemispheres even as we watch. There are those places where public officials are allowing science to guide their decisions. States like that are cautiously beginning to relax their lockdowns and finding no spike in illness as they do it. Those are the free states. And then there's the other half of the country, the places where you're glad you don't live right now. In those places, power-drunk politicians crow about science but resolutely ignore its findings. They don't read the studies. They don't care what the data say. Their decisions are driven by ambition, political calculation, and the pure animal joy of controlling other people's lives. Places like that are tightening their lockdowns even now. Maybe no place in the country represents the authoritarian approach, the Chinese approach, more starkly than Los Angeles does. LA County has more residents than New York City. But while New York has had close to 200,000 confirmed cases of coronavirus, LA has had only about 35,000 in the whole county. Now, the real figure is certainly much higher than that. That's what we find every time widespread testing takes place. But that's the point. So few people in LA have died, relatively speaking, that we're not certain how many are infected. We know they're not sick enough to crowd hospitals. The city's healthcare system has never come close to collapsing. In Los Angeles, the curve is now flat, and it has been flat for weeks. It could reopen tomorrow, and it should reopen, and it would if its leaders were following the science. But it's not reopening. Just the opposite is happening. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti has now extended the lockdown through the end of July. That means at least 2.5 more months of it. He's using law enforcement liberally to make certain that his citizens obey his orders. Police say they brought criminal charges against at least 60, quote, non-essential businesses for the crime of going to work. Countless other businesses have shut forever. They're not coming back. The citizens who remain stuck in Los Angeles are effectively hostages of the mayor. Garcetti has demanded that anyone who goes outside for any reason, as the heat rises in L.A., must wear a mask. It goes without saying there is no science to back up this order or any of Garcetti's so-called health decisions. In fact, it's possible that requiring masks outside will not prevent a single person from being infected in Los Angeles. But Garcetti doesn't care. Anyone who disobeys this order will be punished. It's nuts. But it's just the beginning of Eric Garcetti's thoroughly bizarre restrictions. The more you know, the weirder it is. Watch, for example, as Garcetti explains that anyone who goes to the beach must make certain not to touch dry sand. Wet sand is fine. Dry sand is now illegal.
Beaches will open up this week for exercise and active recreation only in the wet sand, I guess is a good way of thinking about it, not hanging out and tanning in the dry sand.
What's the science behind this? Once again, of course, there is none. None. This isn't reasoned, thoughtful policymaking. It's the expression of an autocrat who decided he must look tough by doing something or he won't get elected president, which has always been Eric Garcetti's primary goal. It's scary if you think about what this means. It means that America's second largest city has fallen under the total control of a neurotic megalomaniac who is terrified of dry sand. Eric Garcetti's personal phobias are now law in Los Angeles. It makes you think of the final days of Nicolae Ceaușescu in Romania, ranting at his subjects from the podium, imposing his strange obsessions on a helpless population. It would not be surprising to learn that Eric Garcetti is a compulsive hand washer with a very strange personal life. Guys like this are always the same once you scratch the surface. So how long will Los Angeles have to live like this? Possibly forever, Garcetti announced this week.
We've never been fully closed. We'll never be completely open until we have a cure. But I do believe that we can take steps, but monitor those numbers, listen to the scientists and the medical professionals, and make the tough calls, even when there's criticism.
Yeah, this can't go on. It's too crazy. Now, you may mock Los Angeles, and in some cases, it's deserved. There are some flaky people who live there. Barbara Streisand's in Malibu. But there are also an awful lot of normal, decent people in Los Angeles, millions of them. And some of them understand where Eric Garcetti is taking them and their city, and they've had enough. A couple of days ago, a group of them came together. It's totally bipartisan. Some of them are well-known liberal Democrats. Some are conservative Republicans and have been all their lives. Others are labor leaders, middle-class voters. The one thing they all have in common is the dead certain knowledge that Mayor Eric Garcetti is poison. He's hurting their city. He's hurting their families. Garcetti has allowed tens of thousands of mentally ill drug addicts to live on Los Angeles sidewalks and under overpasses. If you've been there recently, you know. He's also tolerated flagrant corruption in his own administration. Now he shut the entire city down simply because he feels like it. This group of citizens is going to try and bounce Eric Garcetti from the mayor's office. And they can. Under California law, politicians can be recalled by voters. You remember that Californians did it to their governor, Gray Davis, 17 years ago. It worked. Now, a recall petition in California requires 330,000 signatures. And that, unfortunately, is where Eric Garcetti has the advantage. Thanks to Garcetti's extended shelter-in-place orders, citizens are not allowed to gather these signatures. So under the guise of public health, Garcetti has stopped his political opponents from opposing him. And he's not the only one. You've seen this happen in many states, Michigan, New Jersey, others. Politicians around the country are doing this. As long as there is no vaccine for the Wuhan coronavirus, they can remain in power unchallenged forever. It's nice for them. They're enjoying it. But in Los Angeles, Garcetti may have gone too far. The future of the city is at stake. The recall Garcetti forces are taking this issue, the issue of signatures, to court, trying to win the right to gather the signatures online. We'll keep you posted on how they do because it's important. But the bigger point is these people are not passive. These are Americans who understand what has been taken from them, and they are trying to get it back, as they should. We're seeing this happen around the country, thank God. In New Jersey, for example, citizens are still banned from assembling to worship together as they choose. That's a direct violation of the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. We asked the governor of Jersey, Phil Murphy, about this when he came on our show. He said he wasn't even really thinking about the Bill of Rights when it comes to controlling his population because it's in the way.
And now we have the drive for a miracle cure vaccine that's supposedly going to save everybody in the country and even the world from the threat of coronavirus. And those who want to see the shutdown, lockdown continue, regardless of the damage to the global and national economies, seem all too eager to link even the thought of economic recovery and return to normalcy with the vaccine. As has been observed by Rush Limbaugh, there may never be a truly effective vaccine for COVID-19. Yes, there will likely be vaccines that can help at least some people afflicted with the disease. We have vaccines for the flu, and yet tens of thousands still die from it in the U.S. and around the world every year. And here again is Microsoft founder, and as the New American calls him, billionaire globalist technocrat Bill Gates, whose company Microsoft has strong business ties with Red China, seemingly at the center of the global push for a miracle vaccine for coronavirus. Now, Gates has, as I understand it, stepped down from direct leadership of his company and is devoting himself to philanthropy and so forth. And at the forefront of that seems to be his push for a vaccine. Some of you may have heard him on my previous program, I believe, where he stated that the economy will never be normal unless and until we can get a vaccine. Everything has got to be the vaccine. As with the disease itself, I'm not saying that a vaccine or vaccines are not desirable, but I'm not sure if I want to be among the first to take one or any of the vaccines that are being developed for coronavirus. I know that there can be serious side effects, sometimes even fatal ones, associated with vaccines. I have heard personally from people who have spoken about how sick they became from vaccines for shingles and human papillomavirus, for example. There's no doubt in my mind that vaccines can be dangerous, even deadly for some people. And this is whether or not you believe claims being made by critics of at least one coronavirus vaccine being developed and promoted by Bill Gates. Let's listen to audio from videos put out by those terrifying but always entertaining conspiracy theorists at Infowars.com. These two are from their ban.video website. The first one is titled Big Pharma's Final Solution. Play soundbite 5, please.
In 1796, Edward Jenner extracted a small sample of an infected child's smallpox pustule and injected it into a young healthy boy. He then gave the boy a large dose of smallpox, and the boy remained healthy. Jenner concluded that the risky treatment had granted the child miraculous immunity. But that's how the immune system works already. So what granted the child immunity? His healthy immune system? Or the injection of foreign infectious tissue? The science is not conclusive. Smallpox spread as a result of European colonization, and it slowed as herd immunity set in. This timeline coincides with the introduction of the smallpox vaccine. Was it the vaccine, or was it natural herd immunity? In some cases, the smallpox vaccine resulted in immunity. In others, it resulted in death. It also created smallpox outbreaks where there were none. The 1902 Biologics Control Act classified vaccines as biologics. This allowed the U.S. government a loophole to bypass stringent testing and fast-track vaccines. Ever since then, vaccines get approved once they produce antibodies. And to this day, the efficacy tests are done on the general population after the vaccines are distributed to the public. The Nazis were experimenting with vaccines on the German people, and the U.S. decreed this to be a war crime when they signed the Nuremberg Charter after the war. And yet, the practice of experimenting on the public with dangerous vaccines continues to grow in America. In April of 1955, known today as the Cutter Incident, more than 200,000 healthy children in the USA received a polio vaccine that resulted in 40,000 cases of polio, leaving 200 children with paralysis and killing 10. Today, the majority of polio is caused by the polio vaccine. By the 1980s, vaccine manufacturers were losing money due to the amount of lawsuits they were paying out to victims of death and disease caused by vaccines. It was well understood that negative reactions and fatality were unavoidable consequences of vaccines, and so they were given legal liability protection. In 1986, the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act was passed by Congress to protect vaccine manufacturers from private lawsuits and to create a fund to compensate victims of vaccine damage and death. In legal theory, vaccines are recognized as being unavoidably unsafe. After the NCVIA passed, there was zero consequence to the vaccine manufacturers if their products killed or harmed the public. This created a gold rush for vaccine companies. A new vaccine accepted onto the CDC schedule is worth about $1 billion a year for the manufacturer. In the early 1980s, children received three vaccines. In the decades following the implementation of the NCVIA, the CDC has increased their childhood vaccine schedule to almost 6 dozen doses. During this same timeline, diseases began spiking, such as peanut allergies, asthma, eczema, and autism. But because these possible outcomes are listed on the manufacturer's insert, the vaccine companies can never be found liable. Studies have shown that the DTP vaccine is killing more people than the disease it was intended to prevent. but the vaccine companies are not liable. The four companies that produce the 72 scheduled vaccines, Merck, Pfizer, Sanofi Pasteur, and GlaxoSmithKline, are all convicted of felony crimes involving falsifying science and defrauding regulators and killing hundreds of thousands of people. And yet, they continue to make billions off of selling their experimental mandatory vaccines. These same companies are also earning hundreds of billions of dollars by selling medications to treat all the emerging illnesses that have appeared since the increased vaccination schedule. The U.S. has some of the highest infant mortality rates in the world. Scientific studies have shown a direct correlation between infant mortality rates and the amount of vaccines mandated to children. The more doses mandated, the more children died. The United States ranks the highest for the amount of experimental doses of children's vaccines mandated to the public. And the third leading cause of death in America is due to medical errors. Is this science denial, or is this science? Starting in 2016, Bill Gates invested millions into vaccine manufacturer Moderna. With zero profit and no significant clinical data, Moderna went public in 2018, valued at $7.5 billion. In late 2019, Moderna's stocks were falling by 30%, but was soon propped up by Anthony Fauci's NIH to develop a new experimental mRNA vaccine. Traditional vaccines are made up of small doses of a disease-causing organism introduced into the body to provoke an immune system response. mRNA vaccines trick the body into producing some of the vital proteins itself by rewriting the DNA inside a cell. They have never before been implemented. Even though the coronavirus is turning out to be less dangerous than the seasonal flu, the NIH is working with Bill Gates to vaccinate the entire global population with a new experimental type of vaccine that will rewrite our DNA. And no matter how dangerous it turns out to be, Big Pharma will only continue to thrive. For InfoWars.com, this is Greg Reese.
I took a polio vaccine as a child and suffered no ill effects that I know of, and I've never had polio. Their statement, you can make your own decisions about what they're saying, but I think they have a lot of interesting points there. Their statement that the third leading cause of death in the U.S. is due to medical mistakes is from a Johns Hopkins University study released last year, which claimed that an estimated 250,000 to 340,000 U.S. deaths each year are the result of these medical mistakes by medical professionals, doctors, and others. Here's the other one of the banned videos on the push for a coronavirus vaccine. It's titled Operation Warp Speed, Vaccines for Everyone. Play soundbite 6, please.
Bill Gates says the only way to liberate the world from their self-quarantine is to be vaccinated.
The most urgent invention in the world right now is a vaccine that prevents you from getting COVID-19. It's going to have to go to 7 billion people. That's how we're going to end this pandemic.
President Trump has chosen a former executive of vaccine giant GlaxoSmithKline to run Operation Warp Speed, an operation to fast-track a vaccine for COVID-19. Trump has announced that he is mobilizing the U.S. military to deliver a coronavirus vaccine when it's ready.
I think we're going to have a vaccine by the end of the year. We're doing very well with a vaccine. And I will tell you something. I just literally left a meeting. We're mobilizing our military and other forces, but we're mobilizing our military on the basis that we do have a vaccine. You know, it's a massive job to give this vaccine. Our military is now being mobilized. So at the end of the year, we're going to be able to give it to a lot of people very, very rapidly.
According to the Department of Defense, they will have enough vaccines for everyone in America. H.R. 6666 is setting up a national contact tracer army.
We need a national core of healthy people who are properly trained to go out and do this contact tracing.
911, what's your emergency?
Hi, yeah. I got a couple handshakers right in front of me.
Okay, sir, are they still in the vicinity?
Yeah, I'm staring at them right now.
Seriously? Okay. Okay.
我注意到在美国也会有一些网友甚至攻击您，说病毒是从您疫苗。
Bill Gates is given a platform in communist China to defend himself.
I'd say it's an ironic if you take somebody who's doing their best to get the world ready and, you know, putting in my case billions of dollars into these tools for infectious diseases. We're in a crazy situation, so there's going to be crazy rumors.
Former intelligence officer Jack Posobiec defends Bill Gates and encourages his Twitter followers to focus on China. And Senator Lindsey Graham repeats this sentiment as well, going so far as to say he would hire Bill Gates to run the WHO and double their funding.
I'm in charge of the appropriations over the WHO, at least a part of it. And what I want is see a change of leadership, because I think they conspired with China to downplay the nature of the virus. The WHO has great scientists, but it's lost confidence. I've lost confidence in the leadership. So a guy like Bill Gates, if Bill Gates was in charge of the WHO, I would double the funding, because I think we need a WHO, but he's not.
The vaccine they are planning to give everyone on Earth is an experimental mRNA vaccine that will alter our DNA forever. And if this experimental vaccine actually works, it will be the first ever in history to do so.
That was one of the left's darlings, former President Bill Clinton, calling for an army of contact tracers. The video then segues into a skit where these two guys are shaking hands after meeting in a park, and they're besieged by contact tracer spies who turn them in to 911 and the cops. As I said, their videos are always entertaining, if nothing else. But I think they have some interesting points. I'm a little concerned. They're not the only ones talking about this either. There's an outfit called the National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org, and they have a pretty good video they just put out. It's on their site about this whole issue and some other things going on out there in the country about the drive to vaccinate everyone with all kinds of vaccines. You might want to go there if you want to see more of what they have to say. I was shocked to hear Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham, saying how he'd like to see Bill Gates as head of the World Health Organization, and if so, he would be for doubling the U.S. funding for the embattled WHO, which has been accused of helping China cover up the early stages of the coronavirus pandemic. The U.S. recently withheld funding for the WHO over this. Fox News a few days ago reported the U.S. funding for the WHO has amounted to about $400 million a year, while Red China only pays about $40 million. If the U.S. does resume funding, and I understand they're close to doing that, Fox News said it will be an estimated about $40 million annually, which would be a 90% reduction, the same as communist China. I don't think we have time, unfortunately. I wanted to play a video from the Behind the Deep State video series of thenewamerican.com on it's titled Bill Gates, Globalist Technocrat Billionaire to Save You with Mandatory Vaccines. Hopefully we can play that next time. But their concern is over Bill Gates, Big Pharma, that is the pharmaceutical industries, and the use of vaccines by world government promoting entities like WHO. Speaking of world government mindset, keep in mind that besides those people who want the coronavirus shutdowns, lockdowns to continue out of what they consider to be legitimate scientific public safety, concerns over public safety, we also have those people, many of them fabulously wealthy and influential, who lean hard left politically, hate America, see this having been founded on slavery, oppression, and injustice, and want to see it utterly destroyed. They see the pandemic as an opportunity to wipe out capitalism, environmental damage, social injustice, and so on. They somehow, incredibly, seem to think that they will keep their riches and power while so much of the rest of the nation is destroyed and rebuilt into their idiotic dream of a socialist collectivist utopia. if they are truly the ones left in power after such a cataclysm, then they may indeed stay rich, but it surely won't be so nice for the rest of us. Well, that's a wrap for another show. Hope you found what we presented of interest. We'll be back 2 weeks from today at the same time. Goodbye for now.